Well, from my home to yours, I want to welcome you to our online campus. My name is Steve Garcia. I'm the lead pastor of Sunrise Church, and I just want to thank you so much for being a part of this today. The fact that you're here watching this and listening to this means that God has something special for you, and I believe he's going to speak powerfully into your life circumstances. You know, early on in my marriage, Kate and I moved from North Carolina up to Ohio, where I spent close to a decade as a youth pastor. And among the many things we loaded into our car were some old boxes from the garage. And after a long day of travel, I unloaded these boxes and brought it up to the second floor apartment where we were now living, and sat down on the couch to relax a little bit, watch some football. Kate made her way into the kitchen to try to whip something up for us to eat, when all of a sudden I hear this blood-curdling scream. Surely, a reaction like this can only be explained by the presence of an axe murderer. Turns out, it was a mouse. So I come running into the kitchen, and my wife is standing on top of a chair, you know, pointing out this mouse running around. I grab a magazine and roll it up, and I start swinging at this thing, and it runs past me out of the kitchen into the rest of the apartment. So now I'm hunting around for this thing, you know, lifting up pillows and boxes to try to see if he'll run out. And that's when I discovered one of those boxes from my garage had a hole chewed in it. This mouse must have been living in my garage in North Carolina and traveled with us 500 miles up to Ohio. I'm just glad he came out in the apartment and didn't come out in the car, or my dear wife may have jumped out of a moving vehicle as we were speeding up the freeway. So all of a sudden I hear another scream. The mouse ran back to the kitchen. So this time I drag behind me this heavy piece of furniture. It's like a chest full of clothes to create a little barricade so the mouse can't get back out and we can keep it contained in the kitchen. So again, I'm swinging away at this dumb little mouse, and he makes a break for this little tiny opening between my barricade and the side of the wall. So I quickly jump and try to slide the barricade in its place, and the mouse disappears. For the next hour, I am searching high and low for this stupid mouse, and I cannot find it anywhere. Meanwhile, Kate is like, we've got to move, take the boxes back to the car. We can no longer live here. And so I decide to put that chest back in place. And when I lift it up, what do you think I find underneath? A dead mouse. Turns out that when I moved that chest to try to block it from getting out, it ran underneath at the exact moment the chest fell. And it turns out that was the mouse's last decision, because now he was a pancake. So I cleaned it up and threw it in the trash outside, and my wife was able to come down off the chair, and I was able to relax a little bit. It's amazing how something so small caused so much stress in our home. And I think conflict is the same way. We bring it into our houses, and it seems so small and insignificant, but if it's not dealt with, it will bring stress and disruption and screaming and even people threatening to move out. Does that sound like your family? You know, dealing with conflict is a lot like dealing with a car. There's preventative maintenance, there's minor repairs, and there's major repairs. If we can do the preventative work and the minor work, it greatly reduces the need to do the major work on our relationships. And today, I want to focus in on one of those preventative maintenance type issues, where if we could just deal with this, it will help us get closer to having a happy home. We're in the midst of a teaching series all about resolving conflict in our families. And each week we've been reading these passages all about the perfect love of God recorded in 1 Corinthians 13. And I'd like to read those again. This is the Apostle Paul writing 1 Corinthians 13, beginning in verse 4. He says, "Love is patient, love is kind. It does not envy, it does not boast, it is not proud, it is not rude, it is not self-seeking, it is not easily angered, it keeps no record of wrongs. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. It always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. Love never fails." Each week in the series, we lock in on at least one aspect of these love verses, and so we've looked at how love always trusts. In another message, we looked at how love is patient and kind and not self-seeking. Last time, we looked at how love is not rude. Today's point of emphasis comes in the middle of verse 4. Love does not envy. What is envy? The word used in this passage literally means to burn with jealousy. Envy isn't just being upset about not having what you want. It's actually boiling with anger when someone else has what you want. You know, envy is the one sin that isn't any fun. Yes, sin is fun. Is a pastor supposed to say that? Of course sin is fun. If it wasn't, none of us would be tempted by it. Sin always has a payoff, at least initially, but that bill always comes. And the cost of sin always outweighs the temporary benefits we experience from it. But envy is different in this way. It's no fun at all. When the person we envy experiences good things, we feel resentful. When the person we envy experiences bad things, we feel regretful. There's really nothing enjoyable about envy. And envy never just stays in our hearts. It always makes its way into our actions. Let's pay attention to the words of James, the half-brother of Jesus. Listen to what he says in James chapter 4. He asks the question, "What causes fights and quarrels among you? Don't they come from your desires that battle within you? You desire but do not have, so you kill. You covet, but you cannot get what you want, so you quarrel and fight." This sounds like too many of our families. Desiring, coveting, quarreling, fighting, killing. It doesn't have to be this way. Envy is a massive contributor to the conflict in our families. And if we could figure out how to deal with this head on, we will be able to take a problem that seems so small, but causes major trouble, and we'll be able to put it behind us and work our way closer to having a happy home. So, if you have a Bible, I'd like for you to open your Bible to the Gospel of Luke chapter 15. If you don't have a Bible, we'll display the verses on the screen. And in Luke 15, Jesus is recorded telling a powerful story that deals with envy. And it happens within a family setting. And with lots of people listening, especially the Pharisees who this story was aimed at, the Pharisees were a group of religious men who were outwardly religious, but inwardly they were wasting away. And Jesus wanted them and ultimately us to hear this story. It's Matthew chapter 15, and we're going to begin in verse 11. It says, Jesus continued, "There was a man who had two sons. The younger one said to his father, 'Father, give me my share of the estate.' So he divided his property between them." Our story begins with three characters, a dad and his two sons. And the younger son decides he wants his independence. He wants out of the family. He wants to leave the care and provision of his father so he could go experience some life somewhere else. This is the first sign of envy. It's when we're blinded to the good things we already have and decide instead to pursue the elusive pleasures somewhere else. The grass is always greener on the other side, as the old saying goes. Verse 13, "Not long after that, the younger son got together all he had, set off for a distant country, and there squandered his wealth in wild living." I'm sure he had a good time, but the party always runs out because the money always runs out. And while this son was having this wild lifestyle, he took his eye off of a storm that was coming his way. Verse 14, "After he had spent everything, there was a severe famine in that whole country, and he began to be in need." So the wise people of his day would have interpreted the impending signs of a famine and would have started making provisions. It's the exact thing that Joseph of the Old Testament did. He created a reserve in the years of plenty to deal with the years of scarcity. This younger son did none of those things. He just lived in the moment, and then the famine hit him, and in an instant, everything was gone. And now he found himself helpless, homeless, and hungry. Let's read on. Verse 15, "So he went and hired himself out to a citizen of that country who sent him to his fields to feed pigs. He longed to fill his stomach with the pods that the pigs were eating, but no one gave him anything." This is a powerful picture of the cost of sin. What started as envy of the world's pleasures has now shifted to envy of the slop bucket of pigs. I mean, where are all the parties? Where are all the friends? Where are all the expensive toys? They're all gone. And it's in this place of desperation that this younger son finally realizes his need for his father. Verse 17, when he came to his senses, he said, "How many of my father's hired servants have food to spare? And here I am starving to death." Verse 20, so he got up and went to his father. May this be a reminder to all of us. No matter how far you wander from God, there is always the choice to return to the Father. The question is, how will he receive us when we come back? Continuing in verse 20. But while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion for him. He ran to his son, threw his arms around him, and kissed him. The son said to him, "Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son." But the father said to his servants, "Quick, bring the best robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. Bring the fattened calf and kill it. Let's have a feast and celebrate, for this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found." So they began to celebrate. What a beautiful picture of the compassion of Jesus. The father in this story is a representative of Christ. And when you and I take the posture of this younger brother, where we fall down and admit our own sins and realize we can't do this life on our own, that we desire to have a relationship with the Father. When we do that, Jesus will not only forgive us, but he'll meet us in the faraway country, wrap us in royalty, and welcome us to the family. This is the personification of the love verses in 1 Corinthians 13. It all congeals in the person of Jesus. And somewhere in the future, I'd love to dig into these verses a little more, but for the brief time we have left, I want to zero in on the response of the older brother. Let's pick things up in the story. This is verse 25. Meanwhile, the older son was in the field. When he came near the house, he heard music and dancing. So he called one of his servants and asked him what was going on. "Your brother has come," he replied, "and your father has killed the fattened calf because he has him back safe and sound." Verse 28, the older brother became angry and refused to go in. Isn't it interesting how envy impacts the family dynamic? It was envy that drove the younger brother out of the home, and now it's envy that was driving the older brother to prevent the son from coming back into the home. Verse 28 continues, so his father went out and pleaded with him, but he answered his father, "Look, all these years I've been slaving for you and never disobeyed your orders. Yet you never gave me even a young goat so I could celebrate with my friends. But when the son of yours who has squandered your property with prostitutes comes home, you kill the fattened calf for him?" All of us understand where the older brother is coming from. Any of us who've ever tried to play by the rules understands where the older brother is coming from. The Pharisees certainly understood where the older brother was coming from. You see, Jesus was the master storyteller, and he brings us all to this point of tension so that he can reveal something that exists deep in our hearts. And among the many lessons that come out of this passage is this one, that love and envy cannot coexist. I cannot both love someone and be jealous of them. The two don't work together. They're like oil and water, like good versus evil. It's like Lakers, Celtics, Dodgers, Giants, Anaheim Angels, and, well, you have to beat a few teams to have a rivalry, but you get what I'm saying. Love and envy cannot coexist. Why? Because envy is the poison and love is the antidote. Envy is a massive contributor to conflict in our families. And we have to deal with it head on. So how are you doing with envy? In fact, I'd like to give you a minute to talk about that very thing. I want to give you a topic of discussion to chat about with the people that you're in the room with right now, that you're watching this message with. If you're in our online chat, get engaged. Hosts, you lead the way. Here's your topic of discussion. I would love for you to share a story from your life where you were envious of someone in your family. Think about that for a second. Share a story of a time you were jealous of another family member. You got 2 minutes. Let's discuss. Well, envy takes on a lot of forms within the family. We often see it powerfully existing between siblings. Maybe you're jealous of your younger brother or your older sister. Maybe you were the family member that was supposed to get married first, but it turned out it was your younger brother and he's got 4 kids and a beautiful family and a life heading in the right direction and you're single and feeling stuck. Sometimes envy exists between spouses, especially if one of them puts their career on hold to raise children. And after the monotonous days of kids fighting and kids crying and cooking and cleaning, bitterness starts to creep in. And every time he takes a call and every time she steps into another meeting, you just feel the envy welling up inside and it's pulling the marriage apart. Sometimes parents unintentionally contribute to envy in their children. Maybe dad connects better with the athletic child than the non-athletic child. And so the whole family is centered around practice and games and traveling, and the non-athletic child is feeling like they don't matter, and they're quietly stewing in their envy, counting out the days when they can get out of the family. Sometimes parents intentionally fan the flames of envy in their children by saying things like, "Why can't you just be like your older sister? Why can't you act more like your brother?" And some of you are grown and you're still hearing that phrase echoing in your heads and you're living your life to gain recognition from others because you're still dealing with the envy that was in your heart as a child. Envy is a problem and it needs to be dealt with. And so based on these passages in Luke 15 and a few others, I'd like to offer some practical steps of how we can counter the power of envy and gain some victory. I've got 3 for you. Maybe one works or maybe all 3 apply to the circumstances of your life and they all begin with the letter R. Here's the first one. The first step to victory over envy is recognize. If you cannot recognize the problem, you will never overcome the problem. If I cannot recognize envy in my life, I'll never be able to stop it, fight it, or prevent it. The thing about envy is that we don't even know it's there. I'm guessing that if I were to ask you right now, what are your top sin struggles? Very few of you would put envy at the top of the list. But we have to heed the words of James in James chapter 3, verse 16. He says, "For where you have envy and selfish ambition, there you find disorder and every evil practice." Well, none of us wants that. I don't want disorder in my family. I don't want everybody practicing evil. But envy is so hard to identify in my life. How can I recognize it when it occurs? I have found that there are certain markers that show themselves in my life that helps me to recognize envy. And one of the most clear ones is angry speech. Let's go back to Luke chapter 15 and let's take a closer look at the conversation that the dad was having with the older son. This is verse 28. It says, "So his father went out and pleaded with him. But he answered his father, 'Look, all these years I've been slaving for you and never disobeyed your orders, yet you never gave me even a young goat so I could celebrate with my friends. But the son of yours who has squandered your property with prostitutes comes home, you kill the fattened calf for him.'" Did you pick up on all the angry statements? Look at verse 29. "I've been slaving for you." Not, "I've been working for you. I've been gainfully employed, thanks to you, Dad. But I'm a slave." He also says in verse 29, "You never gave me even a young goat." We've talked about in the past the danger of using words like always and never. Now it's, "Dad, this is all your fault." Look at verse 30. "This son of yours," not my brother, not, you know, Billy or whatever his name is, but "this son of yours." One of the surefire ways you know that envy has taken root in your heart is that every time you go to talk about a person, only anger and negative speech pours out. Maybe you can't even bring yourself to use this other person's name. You know, that woman you call a wife, that idiot who lives in the basement, that child of yours, that boyfriend of yours, that slime bag you hang around with. Pay careful attention to your speech. And if you find that whenever you talk about a person, that your words are cutting and cynical and angry, that is a dead giveaway that envy has taken root in your heart. And this is the moment where we've got to recognize it's there and pause and ask God, "God, help me to identify what is it that I'm jealous of right now," and lay it at your feet. The first step to gaining victory over envy is we have to recognize. Here's the second: remember. Let me ask you this. How has God blessed you? Not somebody else, you. How has he provided for you? How has he protected you? How has God lavished his love and goodness upon your life? It's critical that we remember these kinds of things to counter the power of envy. Let's contrast the two brothers again in Luke chapter 15. Let's start with the younger one, verse 17. It says, "When he came to his senses, he said, 'How many of my father's hired servants have food to spare? And here I am starving to death.'" What was the catalyst for the younger son to return to the father? He remembered how good he had it. He remembered all of the benefits of being in a right relationship with his father. The older brother, on the other hand, verse 29, he answered his father, "Look, all these years I've been slaving for you and never disobeyed your orders, yet you never gave me even a young goat so I could celebrate with my friends." The older brother fell into the same trap you and I fall into all the time, the comparison trap. Instead of focusing on the positive things in his life, he could only focus on the positive things in somebody else's life. This is a surefire sign that envy has taken residence in your heart when you find yourself comparing yourself to somebody else. Listen to all of the comparisons that the brother makes in this. "I've worked hard. Your brother, or my brother, he train wrecked his life. I never disobeyed. He bailed on the family. I never got a party. He's the star of the show. It's all about him and me comparing myself to him. And this is no good for any of us. You know, social media has contributed a lot of positive things to our culture, particularly removing the distance barriers when it comes to relationships. You know, here at Sunrise, we've leveraged social media, certainly during this pandemic, to stay connected with our people. But social media has a shadow side to it, too. Social media can fan the flames of envy through comparison, and we don't even realize it's happening. You know, after you've thumbed through your social media feed for a while, you start to suddenly feel like the older brother. Why doesn't my husband send me flowers so that I could take a picture of them and post them on Facebook and brag about how great my marriage is? Why is it that they get to go on expensive vacations when I could barely afford a few Happy Meals at McDonald's? Why doesn't my body look like that? Why doesn't my car look like that? They're redoing their kitchen? Come to think of it, my kitchen is so 2018. We don't even realize it, but we fall into the trap of comparison in envy, and it creates within us a sense of dissatisfaction and anger when somebody else experiences good things. We have to remember what God has blessed us with. Okay, maybe your husband doesn't send you flowers, but is there something else that you could thank God for him about? You know, how about the fact that you have found somebody to spend the rest of your life with in marriage? Remember the good things that God has given you. Okay, so maybe you can't afford the expensive vacations that your Facebook friends can. But have you been able to experience sweet memories with your families in the everyday moments? Remember those things to counter the power of envy. Okay, maybe you don't have six-pack abs like the guy who keeps posting pictures of himself on Instagram, you know, taking selfies of his stomach. But can you thank God for your health? Can you remember the good ways he's blessed you with legs that work and a mind that's sharp and a body that is disease-free? We've got to remember the good things in our lives. This is actually the very thing that the father did with this older son. Look at verse 31. He says, "My son, you are always with me and everything I have is yours." What's he doing? He's helping his son remember. Look, you have had care and love and provision and protection all this time. You didn't have to go destroy your life and heap on pain and find yourself desperate in a pig pen to come to that realization. That's blessing enough. Make sure you remember the good things God has done. Count your blessings, not somebody else's. When we fall into the trap of comparing ourselves to someone else, we totally overlook what God has done in our lives and only focus on somebody else's. The first step in gaining victory over envy is recognize. The second is remember. Here's the third. Rejoice. This is the hardest of all three, but I also believe it is the most effective way to battle against envy. To rejoice with someone means that you actually celebrate the very person you are jealous of. This is exactly what the father said to the older son. Look again, verse 31. "My son," the father said, "you're always with me and everything I have is yours, but we had to celebrate and be glad because this brother of yours was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found." Essentially what the father was saying to the older brother is, do you know what it feels like to be so hopeless and somebody comes along and gives you another chance? Do you know what it feels like to realize that you've brought so much pain upon your life that you're no longer worthy to be in the presence of a family, but someone comes along and says, "I love you. I'm not quitting on you." Do you know how that feels, son? That's where your brother is right now. So let's get into that space with him. One of the most powerful verses that has helped me gain victory over envy in my life is found in Romans 12:15. It simply says, "Rejoice with those who rejoice and mourn with those who mourn." Envy gets this exactly backwards. With envy, We mourn when others rejoice, and we rejoice when others mourn. It's maddening. Did you notice that in this story, there's only one person who's upset? And that's the older brother. Everyone's in the house partying and enjoying good food and dancing and singing, and this older brother is pacing in the front yards, and the father has to come out and meet him. What envy does is it pulls you out of the party. But when you rejoice with those who rejoice, you actually can experience joy in your life. When you celebrate another person, there's actually benefits to that. You know, whenever you're really jealous, it becomes very difficult to want to celebrate another person. You know what the secret is? Pray for them. Here's my challenge for you. Identify one person you are jealous of, and I want you to pray for them. Pray for the blessings of God in their life. Pray that He protects them. Pray that He opens doors of opportunity for them. Pray that they put God first in their life and experience peace and joy through Jesus. And watch how your heart follows. Because you're not gonna be happy when disaster comes upon them. Would it make you feel better to know that that family is being torn apart by divorce? Does it make you feel good to know he lost his job or her engagement got called off or they got diagnosed with cancer? Does that make you feel any better? Rejoice with those who rejoice. Okay, so maybe you're struggling with infertility, but your sister is popping out kids like rabbits. Okay, pray for her. Pray that God would care for her and that little baby in her womb and rejoice with her. And you get to experience the benefit when you get to meet your new niece or nephew. So your brother got a promotion and you're still at the bottom of the corporate ladder. Pray for him. Pray that God would give him more opportunities to become a better leader and rejoice with him. Celebrate with him. And guess what? You get to experience the benefit when you're all out to eat and he's the one who picks up the check. Okay, so nobody touched your dish at the family get-together, but everyone was raving about hers. Rejoice with her. Rejoice in the fact that you got to eat a good meal for lunch, and because nobody touched your dish, now you got dinner taken care of. Okay, let's look for ways that we could rejoice. Don't let envy pull you out of the party. Rejoicing and praying with someone, praying for the person that you're jealous of, is a powerful way to change your heart and fight against envy. Because love does not envy. You know, occasionally when bad things happen to someone, we say, karma. You know, we throw around this word, karma. Well, first of all, karma is rooted in the wicked religion of Hinduism and has to do with reincarnation. But karma is this belief that there's some sort of cosmic justice that anytime we do good, good is given back to us, and anytime we do bad, bad is given back to us. Aren't you glad Jesus doesn't treat us that way? Let me again remind you of the description of Jesus in this story, Luke 15:20. But while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion for him. He ran to his son, threw his arms around him, and kissed him. The son said to him, "Father, I've sinned against heaven and against you. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son." But the father said to his servants, "Quick, bring the best robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. Bring the fattened calf and kill it. Let's have a feast and celebrate. For this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found." Jesus doesn't practice karma. He practices grace. He doesn't give us what we deserve. He gives us what we don't deserve. And if you are willing to take that same posture as the younger son, to admit, "I've sinned against you, God. I'm not worthy to be called your child," Jesus will lift you up, forgive you of your sins, and welcome you to the family. Have you ever cried out to Jesus like this? If you have not, today is your day. In a moment, I'll lead you in a prayer, and you could just repeat these words after me. Pray them in your heart, and God will hear you. So if you want to begin a life-transforming relationship with Jesus Christ, I want to invite you right now to stop whatever it is you're doing. You've been running long enough. It's time to come home. And let's ask Jesus to come into our lives. So I want to encourage you right now to pray this prayer with me by repeating these words out loud. Let's pray. Jesus, I cry to you. I need help. I can't do this anymore. I believe you are the Son of God who loves me so much you were willing to die for me. I have sinned against you. Will you forgive me? Will you change me so I could live life your way? In Jesus' name I ask, amen. Now, if you prayed that prayer today and genuinely meant it, we want to rejoice with you. Let us know in the comments if you prayed that prayer. Now it's time to take your next step. I want to ask everyone, pull out your phone and text the word next to the number on the screen. Did you receive Christ today? Text next. Do you want to get going in your relationship with Jesus? Text next. You want to serve? Text next. Do you want to join a small group? Text next. You need some help? Text the word next to the number on the screen. Maybe what you need today is prayer. If you're watching this live, we've got volunteers on standby. We call them prayer partners, and they're ready to pray with you. So just put in the comments your prayer request, and we could pray right now. And for all of us, I want to challenge you. Take one night out of the week where all of the people who live under your roof, get them together and go through our family discussion guide. It could be found on our website at sunrisechurch.org or on our phone app. Just click there on the happy home image and it will bring you to a little screen that says family discussion questions. Take some time to have intentional conversations with the people you live with. I'm telling you, it will make a difference and it could help you counter the power of envy. Love does not envy. Envy will rip your family apart. Let's ask God to help us recognize the signs of it in our life so that we could prevent it. Envy will blind you to the many good things God is doing in your life and get you caught in a maddening cycle of comparing yourself to somebody else. We need to remember the many blessings God has given us now. Envy will cause you to be angry and bitter and step outside of the party. This is where we need to rejoice with those who rejoice and celebrate the very people we are jealous of. This will be an awesome counterpunch to the power of envy. It says this in Proverbs chapter 14, verse 30. A heart at peace gives life to the body, but envy rots the bones. I don't know about you, but I don't want a body that's rotting from the inside out. I don't want a frail family that's ready to break. I want to have peace in my heart. I want to have life in my body, joy in my family. If I'm going to do this with the power of Christ working in me, I've got to take on envy and gain some victory. And if we do, we will be one step closer to having a happy home. And if you believe it in your heart, then somebody say, amen.